So we have some bonus content here for you guys. By now, you've heard from Maria and I, a few change leaders in our community. You've heard our redefinition and reinterpretation of activism itself. You've heard us cry, sob, specifically as it surrounds the Me Too movement, Time's Up, sexism, and the whole ball of wax that that comes along with. So we've talked a lot about shame. So today in the studio, we have Adam McLean.
Hi.
He is the founder of the post-shame movement. I believe we can call it that.
Postshame.org and hashtag postshame.
What is postshame?
Postshame.org was developed as a mechanism for people to find something in their past that they worry would leak online, and they leak it on their own. And when they do so, they share a story of leadership and strength in that area to show themselves as a real leader and someone who's willing to help dissolve shame for others by sharing their past.
I'm just sitting here going through all of the things that I would worry would leak online. Mm-hmm. And
this type of conversation, yeah, sometimes people go a little glassy-eyed because they're like, you said the word shame.
Yeah.
You said the word past, and I'm not listening to you anymore because I'm so, you know, so stressed out.
Yeah.
So the first essay on postshame.org was what to do when you find naked photos of yourself on the internet. And it was republished by New Now Next and became kind of a bigger conversation in the LGBT community and got me invited to Harvard to talk about postshame as a technological disruptor for political campaigns. You know, how do you get ahead of a story, but in a real, authentic, and strong way?
I mean, there is a certain amount of liberation that you're offering people here.
Yeah, I have to say it was pretty freeing to, for years, I've been so uncomfortable with knowing that there were naked photos of me on the internet that were, one set was consensual, one set was non-consensual. The consensual ones was an art project. The non-consensual ones were from a basement at a party. And I didn't know my photo was being taken and surely didn't know they'd be republished. And throughout my late 20s and early 30s, went to great lengths to scrub them from the internet to get them taken down. However, the shame researcher, Brené Brown, she affected me so much when she said there's this big difference between guilt and shame. Guilt is something you can feel for an action, and shame is something you feel about your whole self. So if I was mean to you one day, I should probably feel guilty about that. And I should come to you and say, I feel really bad. I apologize. But do I need to feel shame for my entire being and say, I deserve no more friends for the rest of my life? And can I never see Tyler Maria again? Like, no. Process, go through that guilt, and then, get to a new place.
I feel like I'm in a confessional booth right now. I seriously want to just tell you everything that I would be ever fearful of leaking.
That's another bonus episode.
I would say stay tuned, but I don't know about that, you guys.
Season 2. Tyler's just, confessions.
Tyler just goes through every single thing that he has ever felt shame about. It's going to be a long season.
Well, I mean, here I am, a person with a website and a hashtag saying, I would like to run for office one day. You know, I'm willing to take a stand and be the example. So if it's drugs, sex, and money that usually unwind candidates, with drugs, you can say, here are the drugs I've done. These are the drugs I do again. And these are the drugs I want decriminalized. And every time I have that conversation with people, someone's like, oh, you got to meet my friend who's an advocate in this space for marijuana legalization. Or, oh, you have to talk to my friend in this space who's trying to get sentences reduced for narcotics. And, and you're like, oh, okay. All just because I admitted to having done drugs in the past. Now I get to talk to these leaders. This is amazing.
Even if you aren't stepping into a leadership role, just for life, you know?
Like, totally.
Even if you're, I don't know, whoever you are, like, this can set you free.
When I first launched Post Shame, I did this podcast interview on another podcast called Throwing Shade. And I admit to all this past drug use in it. And both of my parents listened to it. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I guess I've never really talked to them about that. I wonder how they're going to react. And when I talked to each of them, there was no scolding, there was no chiding. They were both so excited to tell me a story of their past shame, some story that they'd never told anyone else before. And so all those things from the past were just like, oh, who cares about that? It seems like you dealt with that. So this story for me.
My turn now.
My turn now. And it's funny. Some people go, well, there might be things in my past I don't want to share. And you're like, okay, that's fine. I'm saying if you plan to step up your leadership game, if you want to take a stand to help dissolve other people's shame, you will have to look in your past and you will have to get right with stuff.
Yeah.
I've sent nudes.
That was Tyler's voice.
Let's clarify.
If you heard any shame in my voice, I'm working on it, okay?
Oh, yeah. That's the other thing. a lot of my friends like will be, you know, in some public space or at a bar or something. And if I'm being goofy, people are like, oh, that's Adam. He has no shame. And I'm like, no, hold on. I'm still processing shame all the time too. I'm just, you know, some of us are doing better than others. You know, how do we help each other?
Yeah. And I think a lot of this is just making really clear the connection between shame and secrecy. Mm-hmm. And that so much of shame is wrapped up in secrecy. And also, secrecy is why we get so angry. You know, when these stories come out about politicians or people we had these expectations of, and then we're like, behind closed doors, you're doing what? I feel like you betrayed me.
I just think it's time for a gut check, because I wonder who hasn't run for office because of that. And right now, I think in our culture, the only people afforded opportunities for shamelessness are straight white men. And that our current president is an example of someone who was a Teflon candidate, just, you know, everything bounced off of him. And if a woman or a person of color or a queer person, I mean, just imagine if anyone else was in office and there were headlines about porn stars and quieting them. I mean, it would be an actual thing. And now it's just like, ugh. Yeah, like we have like 19 things we don't like him for.
And I think that his supporters would say that part of the reason they don't have a problem with it is because he's so forthcoming and he's not secretive. He's like, yeah, did that, paid her off, was before the election, like whatever, you know, and that gets back to the secrecy thing, like can be used for good or evil. But, you know, if you are going to send dick pics, can you be out and open about, like, yeah, I like to send dick pics. What if?
Part of the genesis of this project was considering what the world would be like if Anthony Weiner was still in office. If he could have said, if he lived in a post-shame world and he was like, I know that my computer is going to be hacked. I know that someone is going to be a bad actor on Twitter and bait me into doing this kind of thing. Wouldn't it have been amazing if he had a press conference and said, heads up, this is one of the ways that I get a rise out of, you know, my online communication and what I do in my private time. No campaign funds have been used. You know, I've broken no laws. Everything is consensual. But this is something I do. I've talked to my wife about it and she knows. And it is, that's the way it is. It, just imagine if we lived in that world and then the press would go, oh, like, because he would disarm it entirely.
Being somebody at the center of a movement that is essentially radical honesty, how do you think the Me Too movement can benefit from post-shame?
So I wrote an essay about this and I only shared it with women. I have amazing advisors in my life, many, many of them women. And they all were like, Adam, thank you so much for giving this a shot, but it's still time to listen. Like, we aren't asking for men to lead this. We don't want any men stepping up and saying, I need to be forgiven for this, and this is my side of the story. Instead, we still have to learn really about how deep and entrenched a lot of sexual misconduct in the workplace is. I mean, the fact that Congress had a mechanism in place where our taxpayer dollars paid off all of these, you know, complaints. Once I learned that, I was like, wait, I think that's what I'm, I mean, obviously, you know, people's safety and their well-being is what's most important, but learning that I'm like, wait, taxpayer money pays off these people? How is that allowed? So that just shows like how deep it runs. So this is a great beginning part to the conversation. I would welcome any high-ranking male who wants to try to use post-shame to tell their story. And I would be so happy to help counsel them through that. However, I think we're still very early in that conversation. So
I definitely want space for my voice, but I also appreciate bearing witness to men acknowledging, oh, that time, that wasn't consent, you know?
I wish there were more stories about fathers having that reckoning just so that they could teach it to their kids. Oof. And just, you know, to teach little boys, you know, that sex isn't just about your pleasure. It's about everyone finding pleasure, or telling daughters, you get to be empowered every day of your life. It might be a harder road for you and you may have more obstacles to overcome, but I will always be here as a parent to, you know, answer the questions. Again, secrecy. Like, these kids have to tell their parents, oh, I had a weird sexual experience, or I'm only having one-sided oral sex. It's not an even playing field. So to be able to have those conversations, for a dad to say, oh yeah, it was, you know, I was 25 before I properly, you know, it was on the other side of that exchange or something. And you're like, yeah, that's weird. That's a weird world we live in. We should help fix that.
Do you have hope for the future of leadership, both young people and adults alike?
I have so much hope based on the fact that the internet is a tool that has limitless potential to end us and save us. People start communities and bring people together faster than ever, this with the same speed and efficiency that you can kind of take people down. So it's the sharpest double-edged sword ever created by humanity. Post-shame has an opportunity to start a discussion around freedom of speech and balancing that with online consent and figuring out laws to prevent revenge porn, laws to kind of regulate just how we live online. We need some guardrails. I read a quote that all violence is an effort to transform shame into self-esteem. So instead, if we can dissolve the shame, you can help end violence.
What are some other ways that people can take action now?
Send me your story. Go to postshame.org. We're looking for candidates to utilize postshame, and then we can really start to look at their issues. You know, if you get all the skeletons out of their closet and get that stuff out of the way, they can be more effective. So it's a way to create leaders, embolden leaders, and hold our leaders accountable as well.
Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you.